This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. I'm Phil Dave, and coming up on this program: a father and daughter's plea to the community as the Rubens undergo chemotherapy at the same time. They are asking you to make sure you get yourself checked. The Holocaust survivor who is appealing to the PM to play his part in preventing the persecution of Uyghur Muslims. We speak to Ruth Barnett about her letter to Boris. Dr. Yonatan Gonen from the Israeli Foreign Ministry tells us how social media is playing a massive part in re-educating Arab nations over misconceptions of the Jewish state. And Jewish students' concern at Bristol University as the educational institution, quote, again fails to act on a professor who called to end Zionism. But before all of that, it's time to have a look at this week's copy of the Jewish News. And joining me to go through it is editor Richard Ferrer and features editor Fran Wolfish. Welcome to you both.
Hello there, Phil.
Hello. Now, let's have a little glance at the front page, shall we? And my goodness me, this is a story we're going to be finding out a little more about later on in this very program. But it's kind of inspirational, to say the least. The headline reads, "Family's plea for early cancer test. Brave father and daughter undergo chemo together." Oy.
Yes, Phil. Quite a sort of a poignant story that we start off with this week. Sarah Rubin, who's a mum of three, started treatment for breast cancer just last week. But her father, Graham, is also having chemotherapy for stage 4 pancreatic cancer. It's very sad that father and daughter are going through cancer, obviously, at exactly the same time, and going through cancer treatment and the impact that that must have on their family. But in the feature that we've written this week, they both appear, you know, quite sort of upbeat about the fact, you know, that their treatment has at least started. And the important thing to take away from this, of course, is to go for tests, go to your doctor. I think it's a message that's been put out ever since this pandemic started. If you're not feeling well, all the other things, you know, this isn't just all about COVID. There are plenty of other illnesses and things that can, you know, crop up. And the doctors are there to help us, and we shouldn't delay on going to get ourselves seen and tested. So really, their story is just a plea to the community to go out, look after yourselves, get the help that you need. Don't delay. Don't be afraid because of this pandemic that suddenly the whole NHS is ground to a halt.
Well, as I say, we're going to find out more about that later in this very programme. And obviously, needless to say, we wish them all the best. Let's have a look inside the paper, shall we? And in particular, we're going to turn to page 6 and 7. And oh, good. The headline reads freedom. The bad news is it's looking at all the stuff that we're not doing at the moment.
Not the moment, Phil, but any day, month or year now. Yeah, Fran's had to be very patient with me this week, Phil, because she's had to calm me down on a number of occasions since Monday, when Mr. Johnson set out the government's roadmap back to post-vaccine normality. I've been having, as I'm sure you have too, all sorts of exciting visions about going to bars and restaurants, dinner parties, kids' birthday parties, hugging my mum and dad. Imagine that. Going to cricket, watching QPR. It's also 2019. It's all very exciting. And it's hopefully, with the vaccine rollout being so successful just around the corner. But of course, yes, we do need to take a deep breath and realise that we won't be returning to pre-COVID times for a long time. There are reasons to be cheerful. So yes, we have a spread of all the different elements of Jewish life: care homes, synagogues, sports, schools, travel, hospitality. And we've gone to each individual area and asked those who run it and lead it what their hopes are since the roadmap was announced. Phil, you'll be pleased to hear that you'll be packing your bags for your annual trip to Israel, hopefully by July, according to the travel agents. Restaurants are buzzing with booking sites. Couples are rescheduling their weddings. Outdoor socialising, hopefully over Purim in the next few days and Pesach and onwards. So, yes, I will calm down slightly. I'm not going to go to QPR or watch the cricket just yet. but here's to a summer to make up for what's been an appalling year.
Well, we live in hope, that's for sure, because I tell you, the annual trip to Israel for me has been postponed twice. I know I'm not alone. Make no mistake. I'm perfectly aware that people have had far worse to go through. And the fact that I'm still here to complain about that, I should be grateful for it. But it is pretty disappointing. Come on. I mean, for goodness sake, Israel, to anyone who has never been before, perhaps doesn't appreciate just how glorious a country it actually is. And the fact that sort of I was supposed to go May 2020, that obviously got cancelled or postponed. It was postponed until the end of April, beginning of May this year. That's obviously now got postponed / cancelled. So instead, now I'm hoping that I'm going to go after Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So we live in hope. But one way or another, it's on page 6 and page 7 of the paper. All the stuff that we perhaps took a little too much for granted before. Maybe it will remind us of what we've been missing, and furthermore, it might make us appreciate it just a little bit more when we get it back. Let's have a look at another story that you've got on page 8 this time, so just the next page over. Last orders for Purim booze-ups. Oh, is this the fun police again?
Yeah, it is. I thought prohibition ended in America in the 1930s, Phil, but if the public intoxication support team has its way, it's going to come back with devastating effect on Jewish festivals, just like Purim. Obviously, a few times of the year, it's a duty for Jews to drink Manischewitz and Carmel wine, make merry and wake up with no memory of the night before. However, Public Intoxication Support Team, the acronym, of course, is PIST, are hoping to spoil the party because they think it's antisocial. They don't want to see scenes that you often see in the West End on a Friday and Saturday night of people clowning around, of ASBO sort of damage of public property. They want to cut that out. They say that freedom of religion is one thing, but people need to act responsibly. Yeah, it's a problem, and I hope that Booze for Jews being a mitzvah on Purim, they're not going to spoil the party.
Well, quite. I mean, Fran, could you imagine a world where Purim is completely sober?
I mean, it wouldn't be Purim at all, would it, Phil? What would be the point of that? I mean, the whole essence of the festival is to be happy, of course. And people like to have a drink, make them happy. So that's the point of it. I mean, I can see the point of view as well of PIST in calling for slightly tougher alcohol laws. I mean, through the pandemic, we've seen people increasing their alcohol levels. There is a sort of a serious point here too. But I think, people probably shouldn't be outside drinking to excess and falling over in the gutter.
Yes, it does seem like the Public Intoxication Support Team, PIST, are literally taking the PIST. Our journalist, Esther Alki, has done a really good job on this, put some pressure on. So hopefully everybody's kosher wine will still be safe by this time next year.
Well, quite. Oh, God, it's not depressing enough. Let's cheer ourselves up, shall we? Page 27. Oh, Fran, everyone loves a competition.
Everyone does love a competition. And actually, this week, we're teaming up for the third time with Wheatso and PJ Library to launch our annual Young Writers Competition. So if you're a budding writer aged between 7 and 18, there's two age categories you could enter. Write us a story. This year's theme is about courage, which we thought was very fitting given, the last year that we've been through. I think people have had to face up to their fears or have been inspired by others who have shown incredible courage over the last year. So we want young budding writers to write a story or a poem in no more than 300 words, and you could win an iPad for yourself and for your school.
Unfair. I'm over 18, just so not allowed to enter. But never mind. Alas, that's all we have time for a look at the paper for this week. But do not forget that, of course, if you are isolating at the moment or having to stay indoors one way or another for whatever reason, and you can't get a hold of your copy in person, then you can always see the paper in full as it will be printed on the Jewish News website, which is jewishnews.co.uk. Editor Richard Ferrer and features editor Fran Wolfish, thank you both very much indeed.
Thanks, Phil.
Adios, Phil.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, a father and daughter simultaneously undergoing chemotherapy this week have made an emotional appeal for people not to delay getting tested for cancer. I am really pleased and flattered to say that joining us now is Sarah Rubin and her father, Graham. And I first and foremost want to thank you both for taking the time to speak to us on the Jewish News podcast. Now, I know I'm going to be transparent in this and say that I've been given very strict instructions that this mustn't be too depressing and that this mustn't be too much of a sympathy vote. But I may start by saying how much I admire the pair of you for speaking out like this, because as if your family isn't going through enough, you're actually taking the time to think of others. So thank you.
Well, that's an absolute pleasure. But I would just like to underline just the thoughts you just expressed, that we're not looking for tea and sympathy. We're not self-indulgent. And this little article is not a cry for help. It's simply a hope that more people will get tested for as many of the cancers that are out there in this world. And if we could help anybody's life, then it would be all worthwhile.
Well, I've no doubt that by taking the time to speak to us today, that you will be doing just that. What I am trying to get my head around is that, sort of as if it isn't difficult enough, coming to terms with the news that a member of one's family has been diagnosed as having cancer, to then try and get your head around the fact that you yourself are going through it. Can you sort of give us, again, I know that you're not after sympathy, and I can't stress this enough, it's not about sympathy, it's about understanding what it is that your family is going through. Sarah, from your perspective, are you sort of torn between sort of looking after your own health, but of course worrying about your father's health as well?
Exactly, yes. You know, Dad was diagnosed back in May, and then obviously when I found out about my diagnosis, it did come as such a huge shock. When it was never in my wildest dreams did I ever think that, you know, I would also be going through cancer at the same time as my dad. So obviously, you know, we're thinking, I always think about him, he always thinks about me, but we just take each day as it comes and, you know, enjoy every day, I guess.
Now, obviously, you have made this appeal for people to get themselves tested, but one of the things that I suppose prevents quite a lot of people from going and getting tested is the fear of what they might hear. People don't want to hear, obviously, the word cancer. No one wants to hear it. But just remind people, I suppose, how important it is that the sooner that you catch whatever might be causing you a problem, the better it is and the easier it is to actually treat.
Absolutely. It's a known fact that the earlier you can catch this disease, then the more chance you've got of actually getting a cure. So absolutely, speed is of the essence.
I guess what we're trying to, you know, sort of say to everyone is, you know, even if you feel a lump, or even if you, like with my dad, you know, had a sore back, you know, obviously not everyone's going to turn out with cancer, but, you know, a percentage of people will end up having cancer. And the statistics these days say that 1 in 2 get it, or, you know, so we just want to raise awareness that if you feel, if you have some symptoms, or if you're feeling like you have got a lump, or if you've got anything, that you should really go to your GP.
Well, apart from anything, one of the biggest concerns that I have at the moment is that there is so much emphasis being placed on the pandemic. And don't get me wrong, I think that we can all appreciate that there is an importance to place an emphasis on the pandemic and trying to get the world back to some semblance of normality wherever possible and whenever possible. But it shouldn't be at the detriment of potentially more serious health conditions. And the truth is that something like cancer, depending on obviously what type it is, could be considerably more serious if you ignore it or say, oh, it's fine, I'll wait until after the pandemic.
Yes, absolutely right. Unfortunately, in my particular situation, I have sadly been a victim of the pandemic, because when I first noticed that I was losing a little bit of weight and had a little bit of back pain and started to feel as if I needed to get some tests, the whole of the National Health Service and the private sector had closed down for anything else but COVID. When I sought help in the Northwest, where I live mainly, I wasn't able to get any. So we had to very quickly rush down to London, where we were fortunate enough to be able to get some private help to get the diagnosis.
If you'll forgive my impertinence, am I allowed to ask how you're both doing at this stage, you know, where you're at in your respective treatments?
I've had a mastectomy and I've just started chemo. So I've got 16 rounds of chemo coming up. They sort of start off going every 3 weeks and then they go weekly. Then I've got radio and then some more surgery.
And in my case, I'm receiving palliative care for my cancer. I'm now on my third different set of chemotherapies in the hope that this one now will at least stop the further development of the growths.
In regards to the rest of your family, how are they dealing with this?
They're going out and getting tested because I found out that I have the BRCA2 gene, which is quite common within Ashkenazi Jews. And because of that, from my genetic testing, I found that I'd inherited this gene. So therefore, it's important that my children went out and found out whether they have got this, have inherited the gene as well. So those tests are going on at the moment, and they will continue to be tested ongoing.
I guess also with the point with the BRCA gene is that obviously when I found out that I had breast cancer, I just automatically assumed that I had the gene because the gene is common in breast cancer, ovarian cancer and pancreatic cancer. So obviously I was tested and then found out that I didn't have the gene. So it's come as a huge shock that it's just coincidence that we both have cancer at the same time. And it's for us, it's not nothing to do with genetics, but for so many other people out there, it will be, you know, they will have the gene and they obviously don't know about it.
Just finally, I'd like you just to make your appeal direct. Tell them the message that you want to get out there for why you're doing what you're doing, trying to raise awareness.
Get tested, look after your health.
Everyone needs to check themselves out. If you have a lump, go to the GP. On the other side, and the other flip side is also go and get tested for the BRCA gene, you know, and look after yourself and keep well.
Wishing you both the very best, seriously, because I can't tell you the admiration we all have for you for taking the time to speak to us on the Jewish News podcast about this. Please do keep in touch and all the very best to you. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Phil.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, speaking of worldwide, as Israel basks in the peace deals that were signed back in September, a bit of a surge of curiosity about Israel in parts of the Arab world has been creating a little bit of a buzz online. To find out more about this, I'm delighted to say that we can speak to Dr. Yonatan Gonen, who's head of the New Media in Arabic team at the Israeli Foreign Ministry, who joins me now. Yonatan, first and foremost, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us on the Jewish News Podcast. Can we begin with a little bit about the work that your team is doing? I should imagine it's been a bit of a busy few months for you.
Thank you very much, Phil. So yes, we have a busy, very busy months. But actually, over the years, over the last 10 years, we are interacting with audiences all over the Arab world through social media, daily, post after post. The ministry has more than 10 accounts in Arabic on different social media platforms, such as Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and the last one, we opened an account on TikTok in order to interact more directly with the youth over the Arab world. We operate these accounts from 2011. Actually, the ministry has more than 800 accounts in more than 50 languages all over the world, and Arabic is only one of them. And Israel was one of the first countries over the world to open digital channels in order to interact directly with audiences all over the world in different subjects and to present Israel in a new light, which is not so common in the traditional media over the years. We have two goals in our work. First of all, we want to create a dialogue with the Arab audiences all over the Arab countries because if you think about it, without the social media, we couldn't reach such a large audience in the Arab world, because Israel doesn't have official relations, diplomatic relations, with most of the Arab countries. So the social media is like a big earthquake, a very, very positive earthquake, which let us the opportunity to talk directly with the simple people in the Arab world, and even with the opinion leaders, such as journalists, parliament member. And the second goal is just to try and to present Israel in a new light, to present new facts about Israel, which people in the Arab world didn't know. We want to talk about the diversity of Israel, the culture, the amazing innovation, ecosystems, the cooperation between Israelis and people in the Arab world in different fields. And in this way, to try to break the very common stereotypes towards Israel in the Arab world.
Well, there must be something that you guys are doing right, because I'm reading an article here that tells me that social media pages that are run by Israel have risen by about 40% in terms of sort of traffic to Arabic language social media. So in other words, let's say that it was around 70 million views a month beforehand. It's now around about 100 million. So you guys are clearly doing something right. You must be thrilled.
Yes, over the years, we've seen an increase in the number of people who are seeing our content daily. We can see that some of our posts become very, very viral in the Arab world. We go to the streets, we speak to the simple people in the streets of Israel, and people in the Arab world didn't see them before. I mean, this is the first time that the people in the Arab world actually have an encounter with people in Israel and can see what is happening in the streets, what is the regular life in Israel looks like. And people are very interested in this kind of content, because they don't see it on the traditional media in the Arab world. So, yes, we see a large and a big increase in the numbers, especially after the signing of the Abraham Accords a few months ago. There is a big wave of people entering our accounts and commenting and sharing. And we even saw an increase, very, very big increase in the number of positive comments on our pages.
Which is lovely to hear, but I don't think I'd be doing my job properly. I don't want to put a dampener on this, but we know some of the horrors that are out there on social media that are vehemently anti-Israel, spreads all sorts of rubbish. That's the only word to describe it. It's just rubbish what is spread on social media about Israel. What are you doing to try and counter that?
Yes, most of the comments are actually negative. But, you know, it's a big, it's a large process. It takes time to change minds towards Israel. It takes generations in some of the countries. And actually, the comments differ from country to country. In some places in the Arab world, you can see mainly positive responses towards Israel. People want peace with Israel. And not only, you know, in the UAE or Bahrain or Morocco, you can see it in Iraq. You can see it in some countries in North Africa and in Saudi Arabia and other places. But, you know, we are trying to create a dialogue. And even though it's sometimes a negative dialogue, at least it's a dialogue. At least we present information, and maybe someday people will change their mind. And we can see comments from people who say, in the past, we thought very negative things toward Israel. And today, after reading your posts and surfing in the web and reading things in other social media accounts, we changed our minds. And this is really amazing to get this kind of comments. Of course, it's a big challenge. It takes time. But we hope that at the end of the process, we will see an increase. And it will continue to increase the positive response.
Well, I've no doubt that given what you are all doing and how you're doing it, that things can only get even better than they already are. And thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us about it on this edition of the Jewish News Podcast. Dr. Yonatan Gonen, head of the New Media in Arabic team at the Israeli Foreign Ministry. Toda rabah.
Toda rabah. Thank you very much.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, Jewish student leaders have been left disappointed with Bristol University after they, quote, yet again failed to commit to taking action against an academic who called to end Zionism. Joining me now is one of the students of Bristol University, Sabrina Miller. Sabrina, first and foremost, thank you for joining me on the Jewish News podcast. Naturally, we appreciate your time. This is obviously a bit of a tricky situation because we're obviously speaking to you, which is terrific, and thank you very much indeed. But educator in question is one David Miller, who is obviously not here, and Bristol University aren't here either. So we're very aware of that. But can you, from your perspective, tell us what's happened?
Okay. 2 years ago, I was campaigns officer for Bristol Jewish Society, and a student in David Miller's class came to us with an anonymous complaint saying that in his Harms Against the Powerful module, he both said that Zionism was one of the five pillars of Islamophobia and used this slide that was sort of grimly reminiscent of anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, where he essentially linked British Jewish organisations to the Israeli government and then to the British government, implying that they sort of influenced it in some way. And 2 years ago, Nina Friedman, who was then head of Bristol JSOC, made a complaint against David Miller. And 2 years later, we're still having the same conversation because the University of Bristol have not taken action on this complaint or any subsequent complaints, as far as I'm aware. About a week ago, a video of David Miller calling for an end to Zionism, like you said, sort of surfaced on the internet and sort of reignited some of this conversation that Jewish students had been having. And I work for the Tab Bristol as their features editor, and we made a request for comment to David Miller as a result of his comments, and he came back to us with a statement where he essentially doubled down on everything he was saying and then went further, accusing Bristol JSOC of being a pawn of the State of Israel, of manufacturing a charade of anti-Semitism claims in order to get him fired because he's pro-Palestinian. And for me, this was sort of the final straw and was a step too far. So I started a petition to get David Miller dismissed from university campus. It's now had about 5,400 signatures, I want to say. And then after that, another video emerged of David Miller. I think it was an older video, but it sort of picked up again on Twitter, where he claimed that Zionists were using chicken soup to normalize Zionism within Muslim communities. And I just thought this was utterly ludicrous. So I made a little like comic video about it that I posted on Twitter that then sort of went viral. It's now got 70,000 views and has been retweeted by Rachel Riley, which is really exciting. And that sort of provoked Azawin Stanley and the Electronic Intifada to write a hit piece about me. And that sort of has caused quite a lot of anti-Semitic and nasty comments to come my way.
So this sounds like a very troubling time, to say the least, and that is putting it mildly, obviously. I recognise that at the best of times that university life can be obviously quite stressful without the added need of this going on as well. Just from your perspective, tell us what it's like being a Jewish student at a university who, although, and I should say at this stage, by the way, that Bristol University have made comments, which of course the Jewish News has published this week. The spokesperson did say that they have had a very useful meeting with Bristol Jewish Society, or JSOC, and the UJS, the Union of Jewish Students. We've heard their concerns and are continuing to work with them. So they are obviously listening. They obviously plan on doing something. But from your perspective, what's it like being caught up in the middle of this as a student at Bristol University, where this is going on around you?
To clarify, I wasn't in that meeting that Bristol JSOC had with the University of Bristol, but from my end of things, sort of actions speak a lot louder than words. David Miller is still being allowed to spread his sort of hate online. He still is teaching this very same lecture and Harms Against the Powerful module that we first complained about 2 years ago. And, you know, the university may claim to want to have an inclusive sort of space and care about Jewish students, but I mean, at least from my end of things, there's been no real support from the University of Bristol. And if I compare that to the way that Jewish organizations and charities have supported me, offering me sort of mental health support for all of the abuse that I'm getting online, or looking out for me and my protection, like there's been absolutely none of that from the University of Bristol. And it's just sort of frustrating that no action seems to have been taken.
Well, like I said, I mean, they obviously do appear from their statement to want to do something to resolve it, whether or not that resolution is what I suspect many a Jewish individual hopes for, is that it sort of ultimately prevents an individual who clearly doesn't sort of hold back from expressing what's fundamentally his opinion. And this is quite important to stress, is that there seems to be this very dangerous line, especially when it comes to educational institutions, whether it be from the teachers themselves. And let's take Bristol University out of the equation here at the moment, whether it comes from university themselves, whether it comes from an educator, whether it comes from the students. Opinions are very much a point of passion to many an individual in education. But I think that we sort of find ourselves in a day and age where, unfortunately, opinion is deemed as fact, and that's a very dangerous territory. So, of course, when you listen to an individual spouting such nonsense, regrettably, it's going to sort of potentially influence people to believe that this is what actually is the case. And it feels almost quite scary, if that's not too strong a word.
Yeah, 100%. And I think David Miller's position as a teacher and a lecturer really hammers home that exact point. So we have a student anonymous confession site called Briz Truths, where people post anonymously about various issues. And someone posted about the situation with David Miller, asking for students at the university to show solidarity. And in the comments, lots of students were defending David Miller and sort of called his comments flat out factual and things like that, specifically because his position as a lecturer has elevated his opinion to the point where it's perceived to be fact.
Well, let me say that I know that Bristol University have recently told the Daily Telegraph that UK law requires that we, like all employers, act in accordance with our internal procedures and the ACAS code of conduct. Any action which we might take as an employer is a private matter. We are under obligations of confidentiality in relation to all of our students and staff, which we will continue to comply with. We are speaking to JSOC, Bristol SU and UCU about how we can address students' concerns swiftly, ensuring that we also protect the rights of our staff. As I say, that is a statement that's been published in the Daily Telegraph. And may I say at this stage that obviously if either David Miller or a representative from Bristol University would like to appear on any future episodes of the Jewish News Podcast to offer their side of this debate, we welcome them. Sabrina Miller, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to speak to us on this edition of the Jewish News Podcast. Stay safe and let us hope that the situation resolves swiftly to a standard that appeases, well, the good and the decent, shall we say.
Thank you very much for having me.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, two Holocaust survivors have written to Boris Johnson ahead of the third vote about persecution of Uyghur Muslims in Parliament. Ruth Barnett and Dorrit Oliver-Wolf appealed to the Prime Minister to back renewed efforts about China's actions against the minority community. And I am honoured to say that Ruth joins me now. Ruth, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us on the Jewish News Podcast. I think that first of all, what strikes me as so obvious is that the situation that Uyghur Muslims find themselves going through in China, out of everybody who says, oh, we can totally relate to it, you probably really can relate to it.
Absolutely. And thank you for the invitation to come and speak my mind, which I'm very ready to do. I'm absolutely appalled that 76 years on from the end of World War II and the end of the Holocaust, we are still allowing genocide. And I emphasize the word allowing because genocide does not happen. People allow it to happen by doing nothing to prevent it. And that is something that we are all, every one of us, guilty of.
But I suppose, though, that if you look to the Western world, who are the ones who pledged the famous words, never again, at the end of World War II, it's not necessarily Western countries per se that are taking action. It's more about the lack of action that we're taking. Is that right?
Absolutely. The lack of protest, that is action. We are very much a community of bystanders. it's all far away, it's none of our business, why should we be concerned? But we're part of the human race. We should be concerned if any one member of the human race does not have their human rights respected, then everybody's human rights are in danger.
And far be it from me to put words in your mouth, but this is just the way I see it to you and to other Holocaust survivors. Is it a little bit like saying for us that for as long as we as a community, as a country, whatever you want to look at it as, do nothing or attempt to do nothing about the situation with Uyghur Muslims in China, is it a little bit like us almost insulting Holocaust survivors by saying, okay, well, we'll save one group, but not necessarily the other?
That's a very good point, which I absolutely agree with. But I think it's deeper than that. We've allowed society to become so complex that it's a tendency for people to disappear into their comfort zone and not come out again, to turn a blind eye and a deaf ear to what's going on in the world. And we are all one race. We create so many divisions that we forget that we are all one race.
I don't know how to follow on, because what a sentiment. It's so true. And it's something that has bugged me for as long as I can remember. I don't understand why people go looking for differences rather than looking for parallels. I'm not sure I understand sort of why. It's almost the default setting, if you will, is to look at what divides us, not what unites us.
Well, I've had many people say to me, that's just human nature. And of course, I agree, it is just human nature, but it's not all of human nature. We have demons in our human nature. We also have angels. Why can't we develop the angels instead of the demons? Why can't we be as concerned about our neighbours and the rest of the human race as we are concerned about ourselves?
It's a question that if only we could answer, but what I would like to know is that you've obviously taken this time to pen correspondence with, or at least sign a correspondence with Dorrit Oliver Wolfe, who I mentioned before. What was it that you appealed to the Prime Minister about? What did you say to him or ask of him?
We want to simply have a discussion with him, a positive discussion. I think he's very fearful, or his advisors around him are very fearful that we want to attack him. No way. That is not our intention whatsoever. We want to find something positive as a way out of this situation. We understand that there is a difficult situation around dealing with other countries. Commerce and economy has to continue. We now have a totally global economy that we can't back out of, so that trade deals have to go on. But for heaven's sake, any trade deal should not reward a country for committing genocide.
Have we put too much emphasis on commerce and trade, do you think?
Well, I'm not involved in commerce, and I don't want to judge the people who are, because commerce is important. But I firmly believe that human lives are more important. We have to find a way of balancing that.
Have you had a response from Boris Johnson's office yet?
Well, unfortunately, not yet. I telephoned myself to try and get an answer to the letter we wrote. And I got through to the switchboard, and her reply was that she couldn't put me through to anyone. When was the letter sent? It was sent very recently. Well, you can't expect an answer for 5 or 6 weeks. Now, I know that my colleagues had sent it through urgent channels, and I'm sure there are many urgent channels that do get through, even to be looked at and assessed. So I simply can't accept that we can't have an answer for 5 or 6 weeks to something that is as urgent as this.
Well, I very much hope that we get the answer sooner rather than later, because there's no doubt in my mind that with people like your good self and Dorrit, who are championing the situation that the Uyghur population are facing and trying to stand up for them, that something will give sooner rather than later. And I can't help but think that you are but a beacon of our community for doing such wonders. So thank you for doing so. And thank you very much indeed for speaking to me on the Jewish News podcast.
Thank you. I'm delighted to have had the opportunity. And I hope it will put any fears that the government have at rest, that we really want a positive discussion.
And there you have it. That's it for this edition of the Jewish News podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group. Through its partners, GPG is working to support the growth of Jewish community life in the UK and worldwide. To find out more, visit gpg.org. All that's left for me to do is to say thank you to our guests, Graham and Sarah Rubin, Dr. Yonatan Gonen, Sabrina Miller, and Ruth Barnett. And of course, thank you to our paper review team, editor Richard Ferrer and features editor Fran Wolfish. And we must also say thank you to Justin Cohen for producing this episode. Oh, and by the way, just in case you didn't catch on, last orders for Purim in the paper review earlier on, that might have been a Purim spiel. Sorry about that. Please do subscribe to the show in your podcast application. That way you'll hear any previous episode or be informed when new episodes become available. And don't forget that for more information on any of the stories that we featured, you can always go to jewishnews.co.uk. And if you'd like to comment, well, then we'd love to hear from you. I say it every week and we really do mean it. So feel free to email editorial@thejngroup.com. That's editorial@thejngroup.com. From me, Phil Dave. Do join us next time here on the Jewish News Podcast. Goodbye.